everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I was sitting back there listening to Peggy talk, and I was thinking about all the things I got to be grateful for. And I'm thinking about 40 years and a couple days of staying sober one day at a time in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm thinking about my lovely wife at home and my two lovely children and my four grandsons and the great life that I live today. But the thing I'm more grateful for than anything else right this very moment is that I was never married to Peggy before I got here. God love you, John. I'd like to thank Mary for extending the invitation of allowing me to come and participate in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've always considered it a privilege to be allowed to do so. Of course, I'm one of them people who believe it's a privilege to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never had the assumption that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous because I was lucky enough to stumble into these rooms and get sober and stay sober. I've always considered anything that I'm asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous is a privilege, it's an unearned gift. Because when I sat in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November 1959 and you people talked to me about being sober, it was very nearly my last meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason I thought it was my last meeting because I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. And when you talked to me about being sober, I didn't think you had anything to offer me. Because I was sober, and that always seemed to be my problem. If I could have stayed loaded forever, I'd have never came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I kept getting interrupted after on my happy road of destiny by people in little black and white cars. You know, we get every once in a while some genius somewhere dreams up something to help us. I mean, they come through with some breakthroughs, I'll tell you that, boy. Not very long ago, I guess it has been quite a while ago, down my part of the world, they came up with the breakthrough in the treatment of alcoholism. God, they just sold this thing to anybody that'd buy it. It was called intervention. Do you know that the Los Angeles County Sheriffs knew about it in 1940? If you live the way I live, they'll intervene in your life, too. You don't have to worry about anybody doing it. And it doesn't cost much. I hear all these theories these people got about all this stuff. You know, I mean, I got too much brain damage to try to filter it out, but it's beyond my capacity to understand all this nonsense that you hear that is only valuable to the intellectual mind and has no use to the spiritual concept of Alcoholics Anonymous anyhow. And because I don't know whether I was born alcoholic or not. It's totally immaterial to me where I got it. If I cut it off a toilet seat, it's okay with me. I mean, I don't really care. I mean, the great deal about it is that I finally discovered that I had it. Now, I didn't know what was wrong with me. I spent my entire lifetime before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in a search for something that I needed, but I didn't know what it was because I've always known that there was something wrong with me. Now, I didn't know what it was. I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. I was always restless and irritable and discontent, but I didn't know that those were the symptoms of the most deadly disease that's ever been known to mankind. Stretches back almost 5,000 years of recorded written history, this illness that I have. I don't know I got it. I don't know what's wrong with me. I know a lot about whiskey. A lot about whiskey because people in my family drank whiskey. They made it and they drank it and they do what people who make whiskey and drink whiskey do. They gathered up on Saturday night and beat the hell out of one another. That's what they did. I mean, they were Irish people. They had no type of religion to hold their guilt down. So they just went at it. I mean, they drank whiskey and went to penitentiaries. They drank whiskey and worked them houses on the other side of the tracks. They drank whiskey and beat each other up. My mother got drunk and beat up my dad. Jesus, my dad got drunk and beat my mother up and got it. Every once in a while, they both got drunk and beat me up. I saw what whiskey did to people. And my first reaction to that is, being a smart kid, I'm not going to drink whiskey. Look what it does to these people. I'm not going to drink. Look at them. Look what they do when they drink whiskey. I saw that. I sat as a child and watched these people drink this whiskey and said to myself, I'm not going to drink. Look at them. I'm going to be different. I'm going to be better than. I'm going to step out into that world and have something and do something and be something. That's what I want. But I don't know what to do. I looked around one day and saw my grandmother. My grandmother lived when she was 90 years old. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. My grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal I've been sober 40 years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. Yeah. I look at her and say, you should have had a couple, Granny. It makes you feel better. My grandmother used to get up every Sunday morning of her life and put on the best things she had. She stepped over the bodies, and she went somewhere. I didn't know where she went at first, but when she came back a couple hours later, she was different. She was a little lighter in her step and a little easier in her being, and she danced around these people and cleaned them up and cooked for them and sang songs to Jesus. I took a look at that and filed that in my keen alcoholic mind. For you who are new here in the world, you ain't never going to hear anywhere else about the keen alcoholic mind but here. Peggy didn't mention it. Al-Anons never say anything about the keen alcoholic mind. They say the keen alcoholic got up last night and peed in the linen closet, but they... See, my dilemma was my grandmother and my grandfather. Now, see, my grandfather, who I'm named after, really, used to leave whenever he had money. And he returned when he didn't have money. And returned in various shapes and forms. He came back on a wagon one time. He'd been shot and stabbed and thrown off the second floor balcony of a whorehouse in Kansas City. And I took a look at that and figured Grandma's got the best deal. I just don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that one out. Grandma ain't getting shot. So I have made another mistake, not knowing what's wrong with me. I make a terrible mistake. I think that all I have to do is go where my grandmother goes, do what my grandmother does, I'd be like my grandmother. I am not like my grandmother. My grandmother's not alcoholic. I didn't realize that I was bodily and mentally different from my grandmother. Not knowing that, not being armed with those type of facts, I went over and sat in my grandmother's church as a child and waited for this thing to happen to me that happened to my grandmother. But it didn't happen. I don't remember being scarred by that. I don't remember any type of hidden agenda stuffed in me about that that I'd have to find out later on through cycling something. I don't remember anything at all about it, to tell you the truth. It just didn't, nothing happened. But I remember something happened to me a couple of weeks later, sitting on the back porch of my grandfather's house with my grandfather, watching my grandfather drink whiskey out of a fruit jar. I can remember that like it was yesterday. My grandfather put that jar down. He went somewhere, and I picked it up and took a drink of it. That's all I did. The next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out there in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. What I damn near died learning was this, that everybody who drinks alcohol does not get the same reaction from it that I do. I didn't know that. Alcohol does something for me that it doesn't do for 9 out of the other 10 people who drink it. I didn't know that. I didn't have a clue about anything like that because alcohol was a wonderful thing. God, it was great. I can still remember my first drink. I have forgot everything else in my life. Good things, bad things, everything I can forget, but I have never forgot what it felt like my first drink. That's why alcoholics continue to drink after being sober. They remember what it was like to go, The alcoholics go this way and the Al-Anons go. But you know, the feeling I got from alcohol was not the thing that kept me in bondage. It was not the thing that drove me into the gates of insanity and death and beyond. What got me was what kicked in right behind that, that happens to alcoholics of my type once I ingest alcohol into my system. You see, once I put alcohol into my system, once I put it in there, not before, but once I put it in there, then and only then, am I drinking to overcome a craving that's beyond all human help and beyond all human understanding? I didn't know that. Because what happened to me when I drank alcohol happened to me every time I drank alcohol for the next 20 years of my life. It never changed. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath a bridge and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. Travel around out there, man. I went from reform school, to junior penitentiaries, to penitentiaries, to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I like Nut House better. I mean, it's a little more macho. Hey, come on now. If you're going to be bad, you ought to be bad, for Christ's sake. I mean, don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous works a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. I gave it everything I had. Man, I threw everything into the battle and lost the battle and didn't have an idea what I was fighting. I never knew. I never had a clue what was hitting me. You see, I never one time ever came out of one of them institutions and said to myself, "Self, look here, self. Been a long time since you've had a series of electroshock treatments. Why don't you have a drink? Look here, self. Why don't you have a drink and go out and kill your baby brother? Look here, self. Why don't you go out and destroy everybody that comes in contact with you? Look here, self. Why don't you do all these things that drive you crazy when you're sober? Look here, self." No. I drank after being sober for a period of time for the reason alcoholics of my type drink after being sober for a period of time. Not to do all those things, but just to go. And if I don't learn to live in some type of people of coexistence with this world and the people about me, and don't maintain that type of degree of peace within me on a regular basis, being an alcoholic, I'm going to have to drink again. I don't have any more choice about that than I do about flying around this room. And I don't care how many times I've read the book. I don't care how many of these steps I've tried to apply in my life. I don't care how many times I've prayed. I don't care how many people I've sponsored. I don't care how many times I've been sponsored. I don't care about any of those kind of things. If you put me in the wrong place at the wrong time and the wrong set of circumstances, I'm going to be drunk. I'm an alcoholic. I don't have any choice about that whatsoever. My book tells me somewhere in it that I have lost the choice, the power of choice. And as long as I had the power of choice, I chose not to be sober. But I've lost the power of choice. I don't know what got into me. I'm sitting on a furlough from a reform school. I'm 10 or 11 years old, drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine. The reason for that is because of the experimental stage of the Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. I'll tell you how bad that stuff was. It never saw a grape. But it gets you. And I'm sitting there drinking this stuff, and I don't know, I hear a lot of stuff in AA. I don't know whether it's true or not. Maybe I'm in the wrong place at the wrong time. Maybe I'm sitting on the street corner with my little gang. Anyhow, I'm drinking this stuff, and a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, "You ought to try these, John." And he gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, "What are those?" Will they bother me if I take them? No, I just took them. Thank God they weren't X-Lax. God, there's no telling what kind of a 12-step program we could be hanging around out there, I'll tell you that. They work, that's all I can tell you. A couple years later, I'm on the same street corner with my little gang on a furlough from another reform school. I'm eating these pellets, and I'm drinking this wine, and maybe it's a transition of things. I don't know. A guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm, and I ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. See, I live out there in the streets, and I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. And there's a reason for that. See, I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things, and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, and I'm self-serving. I got an ego bigger than this whole room. My entire lifetime was spent before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. For a long time after I was here, maybe even a great deal of time today, I really don't have a handle on it. Without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lived upon the face of this earth. I had no need for you whatsoever unless you had something I wanted. Then when I got whatever it was that you had that I wanted, I cast you aside like so much trash, I went on about my business. That's the way I live my life. I didn't live my life like that one day or one week until the heat got on. I lived my life like that from my earliest recollection of life until a long time after I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened to me a little over 40-some years ago, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary not very far from here, drifting in and out of total insanity. And what's significant about that to me today is I go places and I run across people that I've known for years and love and who love me. It's the most amazing thing. That day when I came to, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone, but they should be gone. And I don't have any right to have any of them back. I don't have any right to have anything good and decent in my life. Just because I was lucky enough to stumble into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, get sober, and stay that way. Everything that's good and decent in my life is a direct result of a God that I've discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all. Because I have never been anyplace else in the last 40 years. That's what comes stumbling into your meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November, 1959. I can't take any, how in the world could I take any credit for anything good and decent that's happened to me since I've been here? I can't take any credit for coming here. If I'd have known where I was coming, I wouldn't have come. Not at all. And if you'd have put a lie detector test on my arm and said to me, are you an alcoholic? I'd have said, no, I'm not. The needle wouldn't have moved. You cannot be something if you don't know what something is. Regardless of what you say, you can't. I didn't know what it was. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because the institution I was in let women come in there. That's why I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous a little over 40 years ago to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around here ever since. That's funny, isn't it? You know that's really not true. Really not true, not anymore. It may be the reason, it may be something that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, that may be what I thought it was, and I did think it was for a long time. But by the application of these principles coincided into my life and embellished in the way I live my life, more revealed to me. You see, my last time out, I killed me. My last time out, I ended up in the old Los Angeles County Jail, strapped down on a bed, 128 pounds in a bright yellow. There was a medical doctor standing at the foot of my bed telling me I was going to die. His words to me, son, you're going to die and nothing I can do for you. I just nodded at him and said, okay. Okay. 26 years old. And the greatest fear I had in my life was that I was going to live and not die. I was going to have to get out of that bed and go to that penitentiary and come back out and start that rat race all over again. And God knows I didn't want to do that. But I didn't know what to do. So I laid in that bed and waited for that doctor to come in there morning after morning after morning and tell me the same thing. And one night, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer ever said in my life. I said, "Oh God, help me. Oh God, help me." My little grandmother, who loved me more than she loved her life, prayed for me every day of her life because God knows I needed it. And I'm not saying my grandmother's prayers were wasted, but I can tell you this. It wasn't until I asked God for help that I could get it. It wasn't until I stripped me away from me and asked God to help me that I could get help. I can see it as clearly as I can see you. From that moment of surrender right to this very day, I can see the pathway it led. And ain't no way in the world I'm going to get there. Ain't no way I'm going to get in a bus. So I can't tell you that I stayed. So I got loaded 2 weeks later. I'm up running around a jail looking for some more of the poison and put me back on the bed I just gotten off of. Right after that prayer. In the back of my mind is this knowledge. I got something. I know it ain't working the way it's supposed to. If I can find the right combination, it will work. It always has. It has to. It's the only thing, for Christ's sake, that I ever had, so I got loaded again. Now, when I was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a young kid. I used to run around with an old man by the name of Chuck Chamberlain, who was more father to me than I've ever known. The only father I've ever known. He called me son. I called him papa. He used to talk a great deal about surrender. He'd say surrender, the room would rock. Surrender. And I was particularly taken back with that one time, and I asked him on the way home from a meeting one night, I said, "Papa, I want to ask you a question." He said, "What do you want to know, son?" I said, "Didn't I surrender with the same depth in my deathbed in the old Los Angeles County Jail as you did on your kitchen floor in Beverly Hills?" He said, "Why, without a doubt, why?" I said, "How come I got loaded 2 weeks later and you didn't?" He looked at me and smiled. He said, "It's very simple, son. You've got to surrender every day." What a novel concept. What a novel. This is the day you surrender. I didn't know that. I moved in and sat down in the back row of that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that day. I had my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have froze to death, for God's sakes. If I'd have had a hat, I'd have had it on backwards. You know, a guy asked me the other day, he says, "Hey, changed since you got here?" And I thought about it for a while, and I said, "Well, yeah, I'm afraid to tell you it has." He said, "Well, how's it changed?" I said, "When I got here, the men had tattoos and the women wore earrings." I don't judge. I tapped this guy, said next to me, I says, "What is this? There's two big A's hanging up on a backboard." He says, "What is this?" I said, "Some type of an anti-aircraft gate. What the hell is it?" He says, "It's an Alcoholics Anonymous." I sunk down in my seat. Gangsters ain't supposed to be hanging out with them. Why knows? Been Gangsters Anonymous, over hip anonymous, dope fiends anonymous. Remember what I told you? You got to be bad. Doping! Got to make the hair on the back of my neck stand up to think about it. Makes addicts seem kind of candy ass, don't it? I thought to myself, well, I'll wait for these women to get up and tell their racy stories. Now, you got to remember that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there weren't very many young pretty girls hanging around here. If they were, they weren't sent up to that penitentiary where I was at, I'll tell you that. These old gals got up to talk with them, said she drank for a long time. You could look at her, know she'd been somewhere for a long time. She said, "I used to drink." I said, "I'll bet you did." Bad stuff, too. See, I knew everything when I got here. I'm a walking encyclopedia of useless information. I know so damn much about what ain't true, I don't know what is true. And there I sit as a dead man, for all intents and purposes, staring that day at the answer that I had sold my soul for. But I didn't recognize the answer because I didn't know what the problem was. I'm going to tell you over and over and over again, it's hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what the problem is. And I didn't know. I'm attracted. I don't understand these goofy people. These people who came to that meeting. These people got up on Sunday morning and drove 100 miles up those old back roads and spent 2 hours talking to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to them. People like me who sat in the back row and made fun of them. Now, let me tell you how sick that is. Here I am sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home, and I'm making fun of the people who are leaving in an hour. That speaks a great deal about arrogance, I'll tell you that, boy. Or false pride, or however any other way you want to put it. But I'm attracted to these people, and I don't understand them for a lot of reasons. I don't understand these people. For the first time in my life, I've never seen people like these people. You know what these people, they've given a little just for the hell of giving. See, takers like me don't understand givers. Takers like me only hang out with takers. That's why we're all losers. See, all takers are losers. You're looking at one. You got it. That's what it talks about here. That's what this program is all about. They're taking a bunch of takers and turn them into givers. That's what it's all about. It's an invisible line here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're an alcoholic of my type and you don't cross over it, you're going to die drunk. You don't have any qualms about that. I don't care what anybody tells you, how much you know. There's an invisible line here. And that's the line where you've got to cross over from being a taker to being a giver. And if you don't cross over it, you're dead. If you're alcoholic of my type. Now, if you're not alcoholic of my type, what the hell difference does it make? You ain't in a life and death struggle anyhow, for Christ's sake. You're not going to die or blow your brains out if you got a little drinky poo problem. If you got a little drinky poo problem, just quit drinking, for Christ's sake. You got a little problem with drugs, quit using them. If you're an alcoholic, like I'm an alcoholic, and you suffer from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, you better find some way to be a giver in this world. The book Alcoholics Anonymous puts it out in the most simplest form that even people like me with tremendous brain damage can grasp. It says you got to clean house, trust God, and help others. The emphasis is on clean house. I don't know nothing about that. If you proved anything to me when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, you proved to me that I was not an alcoholic. You proved that without a shadow of a doubt. As I sit in your meetings and listen to you talk, Sunday after Sunday, you would get up at podiums like this and you would say things like, I used to drink, now I don't drink anymore, and everything is just wonderful. So I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm not drinking either, and I'm crazy. I wish I was alcoholic. I'd say, God, if I could just be alcoholic, then all I'd have to do is not drink, and I'd be okay. But there's something far more wrong with me than that. I knew that. I didn't know what it was, but I knew there was something wrong with me because I'm as physically sober as the guy saying that, for Christ's sake. And I'm nuts. I'm not sleeping at night. And the reason I'm not sleeping at night is because I have to relive the atrocities that I committed. I have to keep looking at the face of my mother standing at my baby brother's grave, looking at me. Saying, look what you've done now, scum, you've killed our baby. I got to see the nameless faces of the people I destroyed on my self-seeking, self-searching work through this life, trying to take care of my stuff. Me. That's what I did. And I'm not sleeping. And I'd have given anything for it. I'd butt my head against the wall. But how could I be alcoholic? The only thing that gives me any peace is when I drink. The only thing that gives me any peace is when I squeeze off some of that stuff in my arm. You don't understand, people. You see, I don't understand. What I'm describing to these people is not a drinking problem, not a problem with alcohol or a problem with drugs. I'm describing a disease called alcoholism. I don't even know I got it, and I'm living it and don't understand it. I don't know anything about anything. And I'm sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous one Sunday. It was my day. Just my day. The day I'd lived my entire lifetime for. I had no idea that that was the day. If I'd have known it when I woke up that morning, I would not be here tonight. Because I would have not have went to the answer. See, I was not alcoholic, and I was not conditioned to go to alcoholics for answers. And I didn't know. If I'd have known when I woke up that morning that I opened my eyes that I was going to have to be set free from the bondage of self that day, that I was going to give a pathway to walk that would enrich me in so many ways it would be hard for me to describe to any human being who's never been there, I wouldn't have went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I'd have went to see the people I'd been going to for the last 20-some-odd years who did not know what was wrong with me. The doctors and the teachers and the preachers and the counselors and the psychiatrists and the sociologists and all the people who've told me since I was that high, Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems. You see, what none of these people ever learned, never have, and they never will, that every time they told me that I was as physically sober as I am right now, how many times I wanted to scream out at them in my search, "Good God, doctor, don't you understand?" Because they don't. If you're not an alcoholic, you'll never understand why I drink. Never in a million years, no matter how much you want to. But if you're not alcoholic, I'll never understand why you don't. I mean, you ever watch them? I mean, it's pitiful. Ew. That makes me dizzy. Well, if it didn't do any more than that for me, I wouldn't drink it either, for Christ's sake. I went and sat in this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that day. A little guy that I knew did 23 flat years in the penitentiary. Stood at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and told me something that the great learned people that had been poking at me for 20 years didn't know. The great intellectual giants who controlled my life didn't know this. He said very simply from a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous that day, "You don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to." He says, "You don't have to do it like this no more." And nobody had ever told me that. I went up to him after the meeting and said, "How do you learn how to live?" He looked at me and smiled. He said, "Johnny, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If you go get it, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it." I guess he prayed real hard, that little fella. I've been a student of the book Alcoholics Anonymous from that day to this day, and the only thing I've ever found in that book is me. I haven't looked for anything else. See, I'm not looking for a way to sober up the world, cure all society's ills, or be a giant among dwarfs. I'm not looking for anything like that. What I'm looking for is a way to live peacefully and comfortably and joyously with me and you and God. That's it. Now, there's a phenomenon that goes on in my life that's really kind of hard to explain to people who have never experienced it. And just stopping drinking won't bring it about, I'll guarantee you that. The closer I adhere to the principles that are written in our book, and the more willing I become to share that knowledge in this fellowship, just for the sheer joy of doing it, the more peaceful and the more comfortable and the more joyous I live with me and the loving God that made me. Coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and getting sober is not the greatest thing that ever happened to me. Not at all. Not by a long shot. I was sober when I got here. My children being born and my grandchildren being born and the good life that I live today are not the greatest things that ever happened to me and the host of friends. Not at all. The greatest thing that ever happened to me in my life happened to me sitting in a room with a man doing what our program of recovery says is the fifth step. I heard myself say to that man that I was an alcoholic. And from way down deep inside of me, there came a freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. You see, what I know right now is what I've known for a little over 39 years. I know exactly what's wrong with me. I don't know what's wrong with you, and it ain't any of my business. Matter of fact, it ain't anybody's business what's wrong with you. It's your business. You see, I'm an alcoholic, and I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I am not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something or other, I separated me from you, and I couldn't have your program. And the reason I couldn't have it is I separated me from you. I didn't know that. See, I'm a little better than you. I'm a little worse than you. I'm a little smarter than you. I'm a little hipper than you. I'm not like you. I'm different. When I became just like you, the way you describe yourself to our magnificent book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it became absolutely my great privilege to be allowed to partake of this program of recovery, the only one of its kind in 5,000 years of recorded history. It's only the second time there's ever been an answer for people like me. And I'm living right smack dab in the middle of it. I came out of that penitentiary on the 4th day of June, 1961, to a world I didn't know anything about. I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have a Social Security card. I'd never held a job in my life. I didn't know where it was. I had a wife somewhere, an ex-wife somewhere, and a little baby girl that was born to me while I was in the penitentiary somewhere I was never supposed to be able to see according to the authorities. I'm only armed with one thing. In the 19 months that I was an Alcoholics Anonymous in that penitentiary, to the best of my ability, I completed the first 9 steps of our program of recovery. The best of my ability. And I was armed with a dream that maybe, just maybe, you would let me come and sit in your meetings with you. I never dreamed in my wildest imagination you'd ever let a thing like me come sit with you. I never dreamed in my wildest imagination you'd ever ask me to do anything here. But I said to myself, if they would allow me the great privilege of going and sitting in their meetings, I'll do anything they ask me to do. You know, that's been 38 and a half years. And I'm very proud to report to you that I still believe that. I still believe that way down deep in my soul. And if I ever forget it, I'll be drunk. If I ever forget that it's a privilege to come and sit with you good people and do what you've asked me to do, I'll have this program taken away from me, or I get too slick that I don't have to come here anymore, except once in a while, to make sure you know that I'm doing it. I went home to see my mother. She fell off the step blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on a couch. I said, Mom, meeting. She said, fine. I think you should. I'd like to stand here and tell you my mother got sober. I'd like to stand here and tell you that my kids got sober. I'd like to stand here and tell you my grandson's sober, and my dog is sober, and my cat's sober, and we're the sober, sober, sobers. That's not my experience, so I can't speak to you beyond my experience. I sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous enjoying the fruits of this program and watch my mother drink herself to death. 30 years it took her, but she made it. My old sponsor, Norm Alpa, used to talk a great deal about how alcoholism grinds. But it'll grind. It'll get every living thing you got sooner or later if you keep drinking or keep playing with it. A guy said to me one time, how long was your mother sober? Because she came in and out of meetings once in a while. And I had to give him an honest answer. I said, I don't think my mother was ever sober. My mother showed up at meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in a state of undrunkenness, which isn't anything more than just the absence of alcohol or chemicals in her system, but she knew nothing about sobriety. If you ever get a hold of this thing that I call sobriety, you won't be able to do enough for Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll tell you that. The only problem within a state of undrunkenness is sooner or later you have to drink again. I sat at my mother's bedside about 4 years ago and watched my mother die. I held her hand. I was the last thing in this world my mother ever saw, and I love my mother. There was nothing between my mother and I. Thank God for that. Thank God I wasn't involved in all this nonsensical bullshit about somebody else's fault and nobody else's fault. My mother held my hand and went off wherever she goes to. And a smile came over her face. And my mother, you see, my mother doesn't drink anymore. My mother doesn't have to get sober anymore. My mother wasn't allowed to go to places like that. See, that's what alcoholism is. That's what alcoholism promises people like. And my mother died with a smile on her face. But if you'd have told my mother a moment before she died, aren't you proud of your son? Man, he came out of them gangs, out of them streets, out of them penitentiaries. He found out Alcoholics Anonymous deal. He found out he's an alcoholic, and he lives a good life. He pays his taxes. He does what he's supposed to do. He's a solid citizen in the world. Aren't you proud of your son? You know what my mother would have told you? My mother would have told you, my son's not alcoholic. His life got a lot better when he quit running around with them Mexicans. That's no slam on Mexicans. I was raised by Mexicans. We live in the streets. I was raised by them. That's what my mother saw. If you would talk to some of these intellectual giants that float in out of these pin-dried joints around here with their psychobabble that they're indoctrinated with, 30 days of wonderment, they would say things like, I guess your mama's in a state of denial. A denial is a lie. Pure and simple. My book don't talk nothing about no denial. A denial is a flat lie. If somebody says to tell you I am a denial, they tell you you're a liar. You know why I know that? Every time I got arrested, I denied it. My book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it must be the same one they have in Galt, says that I suffer from a delusion. The delusion that I'm like other people, or presently maybe has to be smacked. The great obsession of every abnormal drinker is that someday they're going to control and enjoy their drinking. That's what the book says. That's not a denial. The alcoholic don't know the truth from the false anyhow, for Christ's sake. Denial is some goof dreamed up somewhere as a catchy phraseology. I'm just how many goddamn tombstones those people kill trying to help people like us. Beyond description. But I don't judge. I just observe and report the facts to you. I went to a meeting one night. A guy walked up to me and said, I'm going to be your sponsor. And I said, what? And he said, I'm going to be your sponsor. This skinny-legged guy talked fast. His name is Norm Alvin. I said, okay, what do you want me to do? He said, why do you ask me? I said, you just told me you're going to be my sponsor. He said, Johnny, if I can't run my life, what the hell makes you think I can run yours? I said, well, what am I supposed to do? He said, why don't you just do what I do? I says, what is it you do? He says, when you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. He said, maybe you ought to get a job, Johnny. I said, what? He said, go to work. You're a bum. I said, I'm not a bum, Norm. He said, what are you? I said, I'm an AA member. He says, no, you're a bum. You're an AA bum. Bums don't work. Go to work. Bum. He says, you got to get off of welfare. Boy, I almost hit him then. I said, don't you ever say that to me, Norm Alpy. I ain't never been on welfare. He said, what do you call living in penitentiary? Self-supporting through your own contribution? Took me down and got me a job in the oil fields, for Christ's sake. Big high-rolling, dope-dealing pimp working in the oil fields. That'll humble you, I'll tell you that, dude. Finally got a paycheck. By this time, my wife has come back. Got that little girl I'd never supposed to see. I don't know what to do with a paycheck. I never had one before. What do you do with them? You have to go find out what people do with paychecks. I go stand in markets and watch. See what they do. They come in there and put them kids in them baskets backward, push them down the aisles. Cash your paycheck, smile, look sweet. I got a paycheck, I went home. Told my wife, let's go to the market. She says, why? And I said, that's what they do. She says, who? I said, them. You ever try to explain them to them? But I guess I had one of them spiritual looks in my eyes that a good member of AA knew has. You know, like, we're going to the market, you bitch, or I'm going to kill you. So we went to the market. Why not? She's trembling. You know what I mean? Just looked like a deer on the freeway in the middle of the night. Because she knew me. And she didn't know whether this A&A thing worked or not, to be perfectly truthful with you. Did that, went home, get some money, go get a haircut. Somebody stole her purse. You want to listen to somebody scream, you ought to listen to a thief when they get stolen from. Well, I ran and raved and jumped and hollered. If I'd have caught that guy, it'd be another talker here tonight, I'll tell you that. I'd be up the street in Folsom with all the rest of the losers telling you, hey, it'll work. Yes, it does, for Christ's sake. Don't ever let one of these fools stand at one of these podiums and tell you AA don't work. The only person to ever tell you AA don't work has never experienced AA. I don't know what they've experienced. It sure as hell works for me. Because I went back to work that afternoon. I've been getting paychecks ever since. Isn't that amazing? I have become self-supporting through my own contributions. Isn't that amazing? I've even paid my alimony on time. I'll tell you, you know what the most spiritual experience I've had in the last 13 years? I paid my last alimony check off. Norm was mean to me. I mean, he was absolutely, you know what he used to do to me? I used to call him up just to see if he'd say anything in the middle of the night. And I'd say things like, Norm, and he'd say, what do you want, jackass? Some of us have to work. I'd say, Norm, my program ain't working, Norm. He'd say, why don't you try ours? And he'd say things like, jackass, your program never did work. Your program got you to the ripe old age of 26 years old. Crawling around a cell in solitary confinement, drifting in and out of total insanity. That's your program, jackass. Oh. He didn't even know I was sensitive. He didn't even care. I went to a meeting with him one night. He talked all the time. I went to a meeting with him one night, and I don't know, I was in that stage, you know, 3 or 4 years sober where you know everything. He's got it together. And I'm standing back at the literature table at the coffee break. I thought maybe they were going to pass the basket, so I ran back to the literature table. I really don't judge folks. I've observed things tonight. I just thought I'd pass that on to you. I told the leader of the meeting that when there was all that hubbub going on before Peggy got up here to talk, I said, why don't you just tell them that we've already passed the basket, they can come back. Anyhow, I'm back at this literature table reading the literature, kind of engulfed with my magnificence at the moment. I'm with the speaker, you know, and the guy tapped me on the shoulder, and I turned around, looked him in the eyes, one of them starry-eyed newcomers. He said, man, Johnny, I heard you talk the other night. Do you know you're a miracle? I said, really? Would you try to explain to me just exactly what it was I said? You know how humble we are, Christ's sake. He went on and on and on. I just kind of floated back and got down in my chair and sit there and stared at old Norm and looked out the window to see where my starship was. And was coming. I'm really out there, I'll tell you. Old Norm's talking, he's watching me. We're in the car that night going home and I'm staring out the window. Old Norm looked over at me and he said, jackass? He said, are you smoking that stuff again? And I said to him, Norm, I don't think you're going to understand this, but I'm a miracle. Oh, Norm didn't understand that. Not that night. He was not in a very good mood. He screamed at me, yelled at me, almost ran into the divider and screamed. He said, you're what? Where do you get this nonsense, Johnny? I said, I got it in an AA meeting. He says, you're not a miracle, jackass. He said, Alcoholics Anonymous is a miracle. You're just a small part of it. Now, I don't know what that does for all the miracles in golf tonight. But I can tell you what it's done for me. Kept me small enough to stay here. You can't possibly imagine what an egotist like me would do if I believed I was a miracle. You can let your imagination soar. I'd be hiring some Greyhound buses to take us all to Waco to do it right this time. See, I have no doubt that I have that type of an ego. That's why I still have to go to 4, 5, 6 meetings a week. That's why I still have to sit still and pay attention to what goes on in AA meetings, to calm my sick head if I don't get wrapped up in me. So I have to sponsor people. And you ought to see what I get. I mean, geez. Don't stand up, fellas. I don't want to be embarrassed. That's why I have to have a sponsor that's stronger than my head. Because my head's not my friend anyhow. You give me 15 seconds, and I can tell you every reason why I shouldn't even be in AA, left to my own devices. But that's it. I was with old Norm for 22 years before he died. And that man gave me a foundation of life and a zest for this program called Alcoholics Anonymous that I carry with me with the very deepest thing in my soul. But there was another gentleman in my life, and I knew who's no longer here. It's my papa. His name is Chuck, who I love greatly, probably more than I've ever loved anything in my life. I love that old man, and I spent a lot of time with him. Matter of fact, the last year that he lived, I was with him a lot. I got to put him on my lap and rock him to sleep and kiss him and hug him and tell him that I loved him. I loved him greatly. I never had a father of my own like that, but I had him. And I was with him, and he was very, very kind and gentle to me, like a father is to a son. And he would say things to me like, I would try to read little things to him out of our literature, which sometimes is deadly, because it's all ego-stimulating nonsense around here sometimes. I tried to read him a tradition one night, a thing of Pampa coming back from a meeting. I tried to read Why We Were Chosen. So you want to listen to this, Papa? Why We Were Chosen? God, that boosts your ego, man. We the chosen ones. He said, I don't want to hear that, son. Throw that thing out the window. He said, we're not chosen. I said, it says right here we're chosen. He said, I don't care what that says. He says, it makes the rain to fall on the just as well as the unjust. And I said, then, if we're not chosen, how come I'm sober? I want to know why I'm sober. I know people who aren't far better people than I'll ever be who aren't sober, Papa. How come? He said, that's very simple, son. You've come to understand you're one of God's kids and you act like it. I said, well, what do God's kids act like? He says, oh, they just wander around in the world and they try to help God's kids get things done that need to be done. And they do it for free and they do it for fun. Isn't that amazing? We clean house, trust God, and help others. Clean house, trust God, and help others. Just help God's kids get things done that need to be done. Stick out your hand. Try to welcome somebody to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm a very funny kind of person. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And more importantly than anything else, I love alcoholics. I love new alcoholics. Some of the old ones I'm a little iffy with, but new ones I'm crazy. And I was at a meeting a couple of weeks ago. I want to share this with you in case it happens wherever you're at. You'll know that's not supposed to be. I was at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on a Friday night not very long ago in the West Valley in Los Angeles. And I was sitting there, and a young man, they led him up the podium. He took a year for cake, and he said he was an addict, which is a total violation of our tradition, but I didn't say anything. Not my meeting, I didn't care, but I'm up there talking, and over, sitting over there in a little row is a woman, and she's a little laughy and giggly, and she's drunk, is what she is. And so I'm sitting there, I said, you want to talk? Come on, honey. You know, wide open. Anybody can share this podium with me, I don't really care. She's sitting down, kind of calmed down. About 10 minutes later, she's giggling, going again, and I stopped some clown, got up and walked across the room and said to her, hey, get out of here! And I said, hold it, just a damn minute. Sit down, sweetheart. Sit down. He said, no, I said, sit down. And I looked at him, I said, there's a sorry goddamn state of affairs in Alcoholics Anonymous meeting when you let an addict take a cake and you try to throw an alcoholic out of a meeting. Members of Alcoholics Anonymous reacted much the same way you did. And after the meeting, the secretary came up to me and he said this stupid thing. A stupid thing to me. He said a stupid thing to me. He said, well, after all, she was disturbing the meeting. I said, so was that woman with that kid back there, but you didn't ask her to leave the goddamn meeting. Oh. I said, so are the clowns getting up and wandering around, disturbing the meeting, but you didn't ask them to leave. We got so good around here, we can't even have alcoholics in meetings anymore, disturbing us. We're so used to being socialized here. We're so used to the clowns disturbing our meetings, we think that's part of the deal. That's not part of the deal. What my dear departed sponsor, Norm Albee, taught me, and what Papa Chuck taught me more than anything else, and I'll take it to my grave with me, he taught me a thing that we seemingly are forgetting all about around here. It's a thing called common courtesy. Concerned about the person sitting next to us. My sponsor, Norm, told me, if I don't want to listen, that's fine, Johnny. You don't have to. Maybe the guy sitting next to you does. Sit still and shut up. Oh. I don't know how I got into that, but that's the way I feel about it. See, where I go to meetings, the people go there for the meeting. They go there to hear whatever it is they're supposed to hear, and they have enough consideration and thoughtfulness for the newcomer that if they don't want to listen and they know the speaker, they will sit still with some type of dignity and allow the newcomer to hear whatever they have to hear. Because Papa said a long time ago, you can only hear when you hear, and you only see when you can see, and it doesn't make any difference who's talking. That's simple. So don't be so self-centered and self-serving in Alcoholics Anonymous, where life and death hangs on a thread here, or a thought process, that we don't allow some newcomer to come in and sit down and have the same comfort and courtesy that we had when we came to Alcoholics Anonymous. That people were kind and considerate to us, and sit still and paid attention. So we could sit still and pay attention. Now when I die and get to wherever I'm going to go, and I get there, because there have been three men in my life who, as I'm sure I'm living and standing here tonight, are God's kids. And the reason I know they're God's kids is because I watch them do what God's kids do. I watch my sponsor, Norm, get up out of his off his butt every night and go out in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and try to help God's kids get things done, need to be done. He did it night after night, after weekend after weekend after weekend. I watched my Papa Chuck until he was no longer physically able to do the same thing night after night after week after week after week. He'd go out and try to help God's kids get things done and need to be done. I watched my current sponsor, a guy by the name of Clancy Emerson, do the same thing night after night after weekend after weekend after weekend. These people are God's kids. And if they ain't, I don't want to be one. That's very simple. And when I die and I get to places wherever I'm going, and there ain't birds singing and pretty flowers and people like old Norm and Chuck and other people that I could name endlessly, I don't think I want to go there. And the reason I don't want to go there is before those people came into my life, I lived in absolute hell. A hell of my own making, of my own selfishness, of my own self-centeredness. And since those people have been in my life and introduced me to this magnificent program of Recovery Alcoholics Anonymous through their examples, I know what it's like to live in heaven. I know what it's like to live in peace, days and weeks at a time. I know what it's like to live all day long and want nothing for myself whatsoever. I know what it's like to love a woman more than I can possibly love myself. I know what it's like to pick my little 9-year-old grandson up and hug him and make him kiss me on the lips. And I didn't bring those things with me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I brought hate, bitterness, fear, and terrible anger and terrible violence to your magnificent room. Because of your example in the writing in our book called Alcoholics Anonymous and my willingness to do whatever it is that you do here, I have had those things replaced with some type of peace and harmony and joy and a God of my very own. Why I come to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous happened to me sitting back there. I sit back there and listen to everything that was done here. I would listen to the chapter, the fifth chapter. I listened to the traditions. I listened to the history of the Galt Fellowship. I listened to the countdown and saw the people stand up. I listened to this magnificent lady talk about Al-Anon. And while I'm doing that, you see, I'm more interested in them than I am myself. And in those brief moments of my life, I'm about as close to God as I'm ever going to get. I am never going to be any closer to God than that. Ever. That's why I come to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not to stay sober. I come in here because in here, I am oneness with you and I am oneness with my God because I am more concerned about your well-being most of the time than I am my own. The book says, Papa told me a long time ago, that nature abhors a vacuum, but God abhors a vacuum even more under heaven and earth, he said. He said to me that if I could empty myself of self, I would be automatically full of God. So I come here and sit with you and in contact with my God. If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to let you know something. You brought everything into Alcoholics Anonymous that you need. You brought your own God. You brought your own ideas. You brought your own thoughts. My wish for you is that you can stay with us long enough to discover what is really wrong with you and realize that we have a program that works. It really does. It's a way of life that really works. Alcoholics Anonymous really works. Everything I have in my life I owe to this program. Everything. The way I feel, the way I'm going to feel. My kids, my grandkids, my money, my car, my home, everything. Everything I ever hope to have tomorrow I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And dear friend, believe me this. It is a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA and good folks like you, I could have missed it all. Thank you.